Blog Talk Radio.
Are you ready for more propaganda? Well, you're in the wrong place at the right time. Columbo Chronicles is for critical thinkers. Let's welcome the consumer advocate for justice. Here's the Rose, Rose Columbo.
It's the Rose, Rose Columbo, and I'm right here for you on the West Coast. And we're having a beautiful day. It's sunny. There's a few clouds out. The birds are chirping. The butterflies are fluttering around. So you get the gist of how fortunate we are on the West Coast to have such beautiful weather and, of course, the ocean breeze that keeps us smog-free. So lucky us. But we do still keep in mind everyone over in Maui, Lahaina, and we do want to keep them in prayer and also do what we can to support them and to not just support them morally, but to pray for them and their families that they can resolve the issues over there and that they can get their land back and their homes rebuilt. That would be the real blessing. But we'll find out what is going to happen and how the government is going to help, federal government is going to help the state of Hawaii that was once a monarch. And they were very happy being a monarch, in fact. And so we turned it into cement. And this is a sad time, so for them and for the country. So we need to be sure to keep them in mind and in prayer. But today I want to tell you that we are going to enter into the world of authors and experts. And we have a really dynamic guest. And her name is Esther Perlman. And Esther Perlman is a dynamic woman. And she actually promoted works named Esther Unleashed, Volume 1 and Volume 2. And she also wrote the best-selling book, It's Not Easy Being a Woman. And that's still true today. And she's a noted artist as well. And I am going to tell you more about Esther Perlman in just a moment. But as an author myself and an award-winning author with 5-star reviews, I have a special political satire just for you. So we'll be back after this important message. And critics say it has a very concerning message for all of humanity worldwide and has been considered for film.
Obamasaurus, the new book by Rose M. Colombo, is an updated version of a political satire that reflects the political roadmap of today's world. Written with an Orwellian twist, will humanity survive or suffer depopulation or extinction? Obamasaurus by Rose M. Colombo, available at Amazon.com.
Inside, it's available at your bookstores if you call and order it, Barnes & Noble, and at Amazon.com in hardcover, paperback, and Kindle.
The Justice Club is back on Columbo Chronicles Live Podcast. Join Rose Columbo at noon and find out what tips she will provide in a world of little justice.
Columbo Chronicles Live. Columbo is on their trail. Listen up at Columbo Chronicles Live.
Hi, everyone. If you just joined us on Columbo Chronicles, we have a dynamic guest, returning guest today. Haven't talked to her in quite a while, so we want to catch up with her latest adventures. She is an inspiration to all females, but also to all children and adults everywhere. And let me tell you a little bit about her before we say hello. She has her artwork, her painting, creative art at the, and has been seen and is seen at Creative Arts Center Gallery, Blue Steven Gallery, Tag Gallery, Viva Gallery, Studio 508, Feingood Gallery, Pacific Palisades Library, San Fernando Valley Arts and Cultural Center, which is a great accomplishment, not easy to do. Esther Perlman finds inspiration all around her. She loves to assemble objects she finds into collage, create impressionist flowers, and tell stories. a pen and sketchbook are her companions as she observes the world around her, with no subject too small for her pen or paintbrush. She enjoys constructing images of whimsy using pen, paper, and washi tape, and I'm fortunate that she has sent me a few of her creations, which I have kept. And also, her books are, as if you weren't listening earlier, It's Not Easy Being a Woman, Esther Unleashed, I love that title, Esther Unleashed, Looking at the Bright Side Mostly, A Face is a Face is a Face, The Book of Esther, O Canada, Lessons in Patience on a Tour of the Canadian Rockies. So that's just part of what Esther is up to, because Esther's up to more than just all of the wonderful successes I just told you about, because she is an inspiration and she has more to tell us about what she's up to today. So let's just say hello to Esther and let's get started with Columbo Chronicles, entering into the world of authors and experts. Hi, Esther. So wonderful to hear your voice again. So let's hear you say hello to everyone.
Hello. Ha. No, hello. Yes.
Nice yeah, to hear and aloha from you. To our friends in Hawaii. Well, Esther, it's been a while, and I know that you have you never give up. You always got a new goal. You always achieve your goals, and I still say it, you know, when people talk about age, I always say, well, what difference does it make, you know, age? I go, it's just a number. Never give up with your dreams and your goals, and that, I think, keeps people active and inspired and having love for life is never giving up on life. And so, Esther, my first question to you is there anything you want to tell our audience about your background that I may have missed?
My background? Well, if you read my books, then you know my background. No, well, right now I did a play March 9th, and it was snowing and cold in Hillcrest Mountains, and I was worried about the actress that was going to play my part, and because they had to, you know, pull out the snow off the roads and everything, and she couldn't eat for like a week, you know, she had to, you know, use all the leftovers, and so I was worried that she was not going to be able to make my play. That was like a big concern. And thank goodness the sun came out. She was able to come down the hill, and the play was given over at the White Fire Theater in Sherman Oaks. And so that's what I've been doing. You know, I was doing that for the last year, creating that play. And then we had to get the actress to play my part. And, you know, I didn't want someone my age. I wanted someone younger to have strength, stand there for an hour and a half to talk. And Robin Quinn, my editor, she went on backstage and posted the name of the play that was written, that I wrote. And so we got four different people that tried out, and then I picked out Lori Wardell, and she was only 49, so maybe doesn't sound that young, but still, you know, for me, 49 sounds young. Anyway, so she had been a gymnast and a singer, and was in a band, and I'd had done comedy, and so we liked her, Robin and I. We hired her on Zoom, and she did all of her tryouts, Crestline, and And I didn't even meet her until she came down for the day of the play. So I was so happy the sun came out and the snow, you know, had melted somewhat. And so that was a big accomplishment. It was really exciting for me.
And how does it feel reinventing me? How does it actually feel? Because you kind of did reinvent yourself.
Yes. Well, you know, if something doesn't work, you try again. You don't just go in a hole and just hide yourself. So, like, when I was trying to be a tap dancer in when I was 11, and then I was sitting on the side of the room with watching my girlfriend Brenda, and she was dancing with the group, and then I was dancing while I was sitting down. It kind of looked kind of weird, probably. And then the teacher asked me if I wanted to join the class. So it took a couple weeks to join the class. And then when it was Christmas time, after a couple months, she said, you wouldn't be able to come to our Christmas party because you're Jewish. And I said, So I felt bad, you know, I stopped the class because I didn't want to be, you know, kind of insulted. But so that was one of my interventions. And then when I was going to college and I heard this wonderful music down the street when I was waiting for the bus to come, I would take the bus for 4 years, college from where I was living with my parents. And I heard this wonderful music and everybody's laughing and having a good old time. And I was like, gee, that's not me. So I went over to that dance studio and asked them, you know, could I take a dance? Could I teach dancing lessons? I said, well, you'll have to learn how to dance first. And you know, the waltz, samba, tango, cha-cha-cha, rumba. And so after a couple of weeks, I learned some of those steps. And then I was like two or three steps before the person that I was teaching knew how to do it. So I was teaching dancing lessons. I was going to school part-time and working full-time, taking the bus everywhere. And then I met my husband, and I got him interested. So he went to take the dancing lessons. And then when I got married and then I got pregnant, and so I was 3 months of pregnant, and the people would call me Mother of Pearl, you know, because my name was Pearlman. So Marty was taking classes, and then I was 3 months pregnant, and so, you know, being pregnant wasn't popular at that time for dancing teachers. So anyway, so then I had to quit that, and then so I had my first child. We had our first child, Larry, and then I decided, I said, oh, Marty, why don't I become a model? And he says, I'll pay for that. And so he paid for that, and I said, take this the bus, and then I took my bicycle to the modeling school and back. And then by that time, we moved down, and I asked them if I could still, you know, be a model. And they said, no, well, you're living in Downey now. You have to you have to try out over there, or go to the Macy's or something and show your pictures. And then I did do one stint with one of the newcomers club in Downey, and I did do a modeling thing with five other women. And you get to buy clothes cheap if you're a model. So that was my payment for that. So then I got pregnant again, and then so I had to not stop modeling, my big career one time. And then, so, you know, that was part of my, and then I would say, you know, when I was going to school and being a mother, and then taking the bus to the school, and then I wanted to take up art, and my husband says, I don't want to pay for, you can't go to art school, and you got to get a regular degree. So then I got a degree in radio, TV, film, and then I still took art because I love the art teachers. They were always polite and nice and saying stuff like, you'll always have something to remember your years, you know, if you do art. Anyway, so those are some of my careers. And then I started writing books and then drawing pictures. Like, we would go to Canada and I would be on the bus in Canada, and then I would take, draw all the pictures of everybody. And then my husband had a heart attack, and then I was drawing the pictures of the nurses. You know, it's very relaxing to draw for me. So those are some of my careers. And then, I did 11 books, and Robin Quim's been my editor for 20 years. She put up with me all that time. And
well,
then,
people realize that, we go through all these steps in life, but everything has something that's leading to something that we're going to be doing in the future many times, not all the time, but people, I think, who are artistic or have a purpose or a mission in life, I think that things that happen to them are always for a reason and a purpose. And I could see how your steps were leading you to the world of art and books and painting and so forth. And that's kind of like my life did the same thing with the jobs I had and the classes I took in college and so forth. So, but at the time when you're young, you don't think about how this is all leading to something else. And it comes in handy when you're having to do something else. So tell me, what was it like to watch somebody else portray you on the stage, on a live performance?
Well, it was really exciting. And I hadn't met the girl, Lori, before in person. So we got there at 11 o'clock in the morning, and then she started practicing around 12. And then, we had put this wig on her, and she hadn't tried it on before. So when she was doing the play, the wig started falling off. During the play, when it was actually the play was going on, the wig was falling down. She kept pulling it up because she had this long black hair, and it was pulling the wig. And she'd be moving around dancing and talking and singing. And so it felt very unusual to have somebody else do me, and she is so clever and funny. And so I was very excited that she did such a fantastic job that, I couldn't believe that it's actually happening. The only thing is, my husband called me up at 3 in the afternoon and said he wasn't coming. So I was kind of pissed off, And then my girlfriend's in Laguna Beach, they couldn't come either. So then I was like, oh, my God, my husband can't come to see it, and my girlfriends can't. But anyway, there were about 40 people that showed up. So it was real sweet. I have such wonderful testimonies. Only thing is they're on the Internet, but I don't know how to push the button to get it, to show it to you. I wish I could send it to you. But, it just felt very exciting to be able, the girl did such a fun job her impressions of different comedians that I admire, and like she did Steve Martin, I'm a wild and crazy guy, you remember how he stands up like that? And so it was real exciting to have that. And then... when I had been on listening to KPFK, there was a lady named Lisa Gold who inspired me because her voice was so exciting and fun. You know how actresses, and you have a great voice too, Rose. I'm glad you're on the radio. You just have a great voice.
Oh, thank you.
And
appreciate that.
You're welcome. And then so Lisa Gold was on KPFK, and so I just was admiring, you know, she was saying she has actors and playwriters and different people on her Zoom show that she was creating. So then I listened to her program and on Zoom, and then took the class and listened to all those different people talking about, you know, acting and writing and whatever. And it was fun. And then when I said, you know, I was a writer of books, and she's, oh, nobody reads books anymore. I was like, oh, no. And then so then I thought, well, I'll write a play. Because when I was in college, I was in screenwriting class, and I got an A. So that was one of the inspirations that I got to create the play, and it really helped. Hello?
Marque el dos.
Oh.
Oh, my God.
Hello?
Sorry, you're here. Hello?
Hello? Did you hang up on me, or did you do a commercial?
No, actually, a voice, something came on my phone that interrupted our conversation that never happened before. That is so strange. Oh. Of course.
Oh,
I'm so
wow.
sorry about that. I have no idea what happened.
Oh, yeah. I hope you listened to my whole story. Do I have to repeat it? No.
Well,
I'm just
actually,
kidding.
What we heard was the part of, no, we heard all the part about how you were on Zoom and then you decided to go from writing books because they told you that wasn't, people didn't read books anymore, which isn't true because people do read books.
Yes, I know. Well, I have 11 books, so I don't know how you're doing promoting your books, because you go to Barnes & Noble and different places?
Well, I promote them on Amazon. I promote them on my social sites. I promote Obamasaurus. So I need to promote the others on this program here, Colombo Chronicles. And then I just started uploading these podcasts so more people can hear what you have to say about your topic, and onto my new YouTube channel, which is, you type in Colombo Chronicles in the search box, and then it lists all the different podcasts you can listen to with an author or an expert or both, and on about just about any topic. So, but today we're talking to Esther Perlman, and she is a dynamic person because she inspires people, because she never gives up, and she's always doing something new and exciting in her life. And she just wrote a play that was actually in the theater, and she was telling us about how she reinvented herself. And how do you talk to yourself about, you know, gee, I think I'll reinvent myself and I won't give up no matter what? A lot of people give up.
Well, you know what? Like every day I look at something that was funny and then I write about it. Like today, somebody, you know, I got a phone call from a FedEx guy. So he said he has a package for my townhouse. I'm in three, and he needed one. Drop something off at five, the condominium five. And so I said, well, how they're not there now. And he says, well, can you sign for it? So I said, well, let me ask my husband. And so, first I asked the guy, well, how big is this package? And he said, oh, it's about, 150 pounds big package. I said, let me ask my husband, because he's like picky about what we should do in this townhouse. And so I go and ask. I said, and he says, "Are you kidding? You want him to put it in our house, in our?" And I said, "Oh, okay. So what do you think I should?" I said, "Well, maybe we could put it in the person's patio, because they're not there." And he says, "Oh, well, okay, go ahead." So then I tell this guy, he's like 6'6", strong guy, and takes about 15 minutes to get the package into the holder to roll it down. And I think, well, maybe you should go in the alley in the garage and put it in there. But then I think, you know, the bottom floor door is, you know, a regular size door, is not going to get that big package in. So then I said, so he went up the patio over here and trimmed down a plant so he can get it in the patio outside. And then I signed for it. But, you know, living in a townhouse and nobody's around and you're here and you're trying to help people, but, you know, that was enormous. I was going to have the guy bring it into my living room. And it's a good thing I asked my husband, because he's a little, you know, outspoken, and he makes a lot of decisions and makes it easier in a way for me. But so anyway, I opened the gate for him, and he came and rolled that gigantic box in, trimmed the plant, and put it in their patio. I don't even know who these people are. Well, what happened was, in my townhouse, one of the neighbors from Tahiti bought two of the other condos for his daughters. And I haven't seen any of those people, but so I hope that they can come and pick up that package in their patio and get it to their house.
Yes. What is that old saying? Finders keepers.
Oh yeah, well, it's too big. I said, well, what is it? Maybe I could use it, you know. But it's was a big. Actually, probably I could have used. Huh?
You actually did an act of kindness there for your neighbor, and I hope they appreciate that.
Yeah,
it is an inspiration to others to do an act of kindness for their neighbors, or their family, or friends, because. I also know that you are very inspired by art, and so who in the art business do you admire the most? Is there one person or more?
Well, I like David Hockney and Van Gogh and, you know, a lot of the famous older Al Capp, you know, those cartoon kind of drawings. And but see, I've been painting and drawing for 22 years, and so I have quite a lot of stuff. And you don't happen to have a garage you can lend me?
But no, we need another garage to somebody lend us. It's funny you said that, because we're thinking about helping get rid of all this stuff.
Oh, I know. Well, I have a ranger come to my house, and so we spend 2 hours trying to separate the good things from the donations to keeping stuff and the art stuff,
right.
You know. So those are all, that's just like one room. I mean, that we only did it that one room twice. So I only need two more times in that one room to try to see, because what I did was I bought this book, this foot massager, and it is so enormous. The box came in, and then I didn't know what size it was. It's about 50 inches, 40 inches long, and then 40 inches wide, and then when that came in, that gigantic box, I was, thank God my husband's on a different floor, he doesn't see it. So I took that box and put it upstairs.
You get along with your husband, he's on a different floor.
I know, that's what's good about having three levels. one person says, then you know where to put something to hide it from them. And so what the guy brought in this box, this other, oh, that's it. Today's the box stories. So then, so I have it on the corner in the living room. I don't have a very large living room. And then I took the boxes out, three boxes, and so I got it down to, you know, 40 by 40 inches, this foot thing. And then I put the boxes, because they're such beautiful boxes. I love boxes. I go into the garbage can and get people's boxes because I could put stuff in those boxes. And they make such beautiful boxes, don't you think? I mean, everybody's ordering from Amazon and then getting all these wonderful boxes. So, you don't collect boxes, do you? So I took that gigantic box, I put it up on the top floor when he wasn't around, but it covered up the light that was coming from the alley. And it made that room dark, and he went in there because he has to go to the bathroom in that room sometimes. And he noticed that box, and all of a sudden I'm on the middle level. I hear him throwing that box down the stairs, bang. And he was pretty pissed off, and he said, "You're saving another box?" But I didn't tell him I got the foot massage. So then he threw it out, and such a beautiful box.
You would collect boxes. Yeah, I get that.
Well, you know, I have an art piece that. So what I did, I took the art. This is about 10 years ago. This art piece is of boxes, and then I put pieces of art on the sides of the box. And I called it Downtown L.A. And when I had an art show, I took those boxes and they put it on another box. And that was my display of art. So, and then one of my neighbors is so cute, Bob. He lets me use some of his cabinets. So I already used all of his cabinets and those boxes with the art on the sides of them. One of these days you come to my house, I'll show you all my art. And so then...
I love it. People do decorate boxes. I know that. And they sell them, you know, for at the craft festivals and things. And, you know, they're really amazing what they can do with a box. I'm impressed.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Tell me where that place is. I'll bring my boxes.
We just went to the Greek festival last weekend, and that was really fun. They had a lot of different crafts that people do, you know, artists like yourself, who my daughter's an artist too. And they were just, it's just so amazing to see what people, the talent that people have and appreciate it as well. And, you know, and so it was really fun. I love going to festivals. We're going to go to the Italian.
Do they have the Greek dancing in a circle too? Do they have that?
Yes, they have everything. Yes, the food, everything, they had live music, and it was so fun. We're going to go to the one again. They just started it up. They didn't have it, you know, because of what happened to our country, and they didn't have it last year. But they're having it again this year. They started it up again because so many people called. We want to go to the Italian festival. It's at a Catholic church in Los Angeles, across from Mel.
Oh, I think I used to go to. Was that near? What street was that on, Crenshaw or something like that? Or
I can't remember offhand, but it is. They had these really fantastic singers with a live band playing Italian songs, like singing like Dean Martin, Frank Sinatra. I mean, it was so funny. We were dancing. Everybody was just dancing. And, oh, my God, it was beautiful. And being Italian, you know, it was even more fun.
I love that. Yeah, I used to go to that, the place. It was a church over there, a Greek church. And I used to do, you know, Greek dancing and Israeli dancing. And, that's so much fun.
It is. It's so much fun. I know if you go to the Italian weddings, everybody does the chicken dance and polka and all kinds of
things. Oh,
dancing.
Yeah, that's so fun. Yeah. Well, yeah, we haven't,
like
I haven't gone dancing much.
Fun.
Huh?
Yeah. I said there's nothing like
say
the cultural festivals. They're just so much fun. And, you know, and all their different types of foods and drinks and everything. It's really fun.
But do you make
that,
Italian Greek food? Do you make Greek food? Stuffed grape leaves.
I've never done that. I do like the Greek salad a lot, though, and that's one of my favorite salads is the Greek salad. But I cook a lot of Italian food, and because we freeze it, you know, and that way because there's only two of us here, so that way, you know, if you're want a meal, it's a home cooked meal, you just pull out the freezer and heat it up. And
I do soups
like that too, you know, that's my creation.
Oh, good.
Because I'm gonna take just a little break, and I want you to think about what are some of the hardships as a child, because I've heard that you were poor as a child, and that you had to wear homemade clothes, et cetera, et cetera. And so I wanted to ask you about that, and because I think it's important in human interest too, because I can relate to that that experience in our Catholic school. So grab a glass of water and catch your breath, and we will be back in just a moment.
Obamasaurus, the new book by Rose M. Colombo, is an updated version of a political satire that reflects the political roadmap of today's world. Written with an Orwellian twist, will humanity survive or suffer depopulation or extinction? Obamasaurus by Rose M. Colombo, available at Amazon.com.
Yes, and Obamasaurus is a political satire, a fictional adventure story, and it has a message for the world, humanity at the end, that critics say will make you very concerned. It's also been considered for film as well. So keep your fingers crossed and pray for a film for my book, Obamasaurus, on Amazon.com, or order it from one of your favorite bookstores.
Howdy, folks. Just stopped in by my favorite restaurant, the Horseshoe Cafe. I highly recommend the home-cooked hot meals and piping hot coffee. In fact, it reminds me of my mom's home cooking when I was growing up. The customer service is excellent. Be sure to save room for the world's best desserts. Make sure you try a slice of fresh homemade pie. The Horseshoe Cafe is located at 154 East 4th Street in the heart of Benson, Arizona. The Horseshoe Cafe is right outside of Tombstone, Sierra Vista, and Tucson. Sometimes Patty and Mike stop by to welcome you. The staff at the Horseshoe Cafe looks forward to seeing you. Stop by to eat or relax. Cool down in the desert with a cold beer or your favorite cocktail. That's the Horseshoe Cafe. Oh, and don't tell anyone I told you, but some people think it's haunted. One thing is for sure. Be sure to bring your appetite.
Colombo Chronicles Live. Colombo is on their trail. Listen up at Colombo Chronicles Live.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back. If you just tuned in, we are talking to Esther Perlman. Esther Perlman is a dynamic woman, and she is an inspiration to everyone because she never gives up. She decides to become an author. That's what she did. She wrote several books. It's Not Easy Being a Woman, Esther Unleashed, and many more. And she has her paintings and artwork in galleries. A couple of them are Creative Arts Center Gallery, Blue 7 Gallery, Tag Gallery, and more. And you can look her up online, Esther Perlman. She's also been called the Mother of Pearl. And she also is an inspiration all around her to everyone, and she does acts of kindness for her neighbors, which I find very inspiring to do, and I think we should do every day. And she sketches in her art book, and she is a painter, and she is a creator of art.
So you can look her up on Amazon.com as well for her books, and you can look up her website as well. Actually, you can actually type in Esther Perlman, and several websites will pop up for you. So we're talking about her career and how she has reinvented herself at every stage of her life, whether it was her books, whether she went into art, whether she went into painting, collages, whatever. She continues in a playwright. So she continues to reinvent herself, which is an inspiration to everyone. Never give up on life. It doesn't matter your age. Age is a number. Always be positive and wake up every morning and say, thank you, God, for one more day. Thank you for this present, as each day is a present. So try to be kind to people, because you don't know if you're going to get the present again the next day. And so I was asking Esther, are you there, Esther?
Yep, yes. That's wonderful what you said. Beautiful.
Thank you. And so, Esther, I was curious about your childhood and what it was like being poor, wearing homemade clothes, and how were you treated by other kids?
Well, my mother would make clothes, and kids would make fun of me and say, where'd you get that? So, and then I would stay over with my friend, call her Kelly, because my friend, I wouldn't say her real name, because I told her about this stuff and she didn't want me to tell her the real name. And so I would tell her, Kelly, that, you know, I would sleep over her. We would sleep over each other's houses. And her, in fact, what Kelly used to do, take her father's car and flood it so he wouldn't be able to have to drive me home. That was so funny. And then also kids would tease me. And then what else? And one girl was teasing me, and I told Kelly, and Kelly went up to her and said, if you're going to pick on her, you will have a fight, because I don't want you picking on her anymore. And so that was nice. She protected me. But there were problems, because, like, she would come to my music class. I was taking a cappella, and she'd come at the first period and say, well, let's go to the beach, Esther. So I would take the bus. We'd take the bus, go and get our bathing suits, and go all the way to Hermosa Beach. And then it was foggy and cold. And then we came back, and then the next day the teacher said, what happened? And then they called the administrator, and so I was not able to do that again. We didn't do that again. But she was a big influence on me. And then another thing that I was getting into trouble. Oh, and we went to camp. So one time, well, I was in the police academy camp for poor people, you know. I don't know if they still have it. So we went to this Hillcrest camp.
They're getting poor by the day.
They're getting poor by the day. Well, it was $7 a week. $7 a week. You could be at the camp for $7. And then I had to beg my mother, please, can I go? We didn't have any money. But anyway, so the police, you know, trucks bus would take us to the camp. And then I had this friend named Brenda, and they would go around the camp and say, the camp is in a fire. There's a fire here. We're all going to die. And they would go around to the hillsides telling all those kids, and they would cry.
Aww.
So anyway, so those are kind of people I hung around with. And then they got in trouble.
Well, you know, I was curious, because, you know, today is so different. Everybody today, all the kids, you know, they have credit cards. They're, you know, they don't babysit anymore. They don't lemonade stands, many of them, you know. They don't have to
throw newspapers, you know, to earn their little, you know, allowance or do house chores and, you know, and so forth. And so it's such a different world that it's interesting because today they're all, you know, just looking down at their phones or playing video games in their bedrooms, isolated. And it's really a different world. And they're not getting the exercise we got in school, you know, the physical education exercise we had in class, and the health and the moral and etiquette classes we had as well. And so
Did you have an etiquette class?
Yeah, we did. It was on how to.
What was that? Were you in a private school?
Well, I was in a private school, but then I went to high school and public school. And, yeah, they had a class where they taught you to, you know, boys to respect girls, girls to respect boys. But I don't know how far that went, but it was a class. And,
well, in the old days, they used to kick the kids out of school or something.
But my point also was, while I was asking you about you're wearing secondhand clothes, not secondhand clothes, I'm sorry, homemade clothes, was because when I was in Catholic school, we wore uniforms. And you had to buy, the parents had to buy two uniforms per student. And that included your shoes had to be a certain way and your socks had to be a certain way. Everything had to be a certain color. Everything had to match. And we also had these little beanies for our head, like the Jews wear on top of their head. I know you call them.
Yarmulke.
We had to wear that. Yeah, and especially if we were going inside the church. We couldn't go inside the church without them. And but there were students who were poor, and we all knew who was poor. And the point of the uniforms was that so everybody was equal. Well, kids still knew who was poor because they bought secondhand uniforms, and you could see they were worn. You know what I'm saying? They weren't brand new, like the crisp new ones and the color and everything. So everybody knew who was poor, and they did discriminate against those kids. I was like, you know, I still remember that because it still bothered me that these kids, who are, of course, not kids anymore, but when they were kids, had to suffer discrimination because their parents couldn't afford to buy them brand new uniforms. And it's interesting, you know, that even in a private school, even if you're wearing the same uniform, if it's used, kids know it's used, and kids would whisper, you know, oh, they're poor, they're poor. Isn't that amazing?
And they wouldn't associate with them either.
Oh, no, they were not. I wrote a new book. It's called Dressing Up and Dressing Down, and it's Blast from the Past to the Present, and how outsourcing and lockdowns and all this importing, exporting has affected the American fashion industry and challenged it so much. And so in the book, though, I tell that little story about we had a Cookie Monster Day. And everybody brought homemade cookies, and the school provided the chocolate milk. And so we had that fun day. And so you would bring enough cookies for the class, and then you would share your cookies, you know, with other students. Well, the two poor students in our class, they brought their cookies, but they looked like biscuits, you know. It didn't look like the other kids' cookies. They look more like biscuits, like, and so nobody was, you know, wanting to exchange their cookies for their cookies, you know. So I don't know. I've always been involved in injustices, so I was like, oh, that's so mean. So I went over there and I said, hi, Margaret. I said, how are you? I said, can I have one of your cookies? Can you have one of mine? You know, and she's so excited, you know. And so we shared cookies, and then I went up to the table and was like, I don't remember their names. And said the same thing. Hi, Agnes. I'd like to have one of your cookies. Want one of mine? You know? Well, they really did taste like biscuits. I have to admit that. I still remember that.
Oh,
but I couldn't stand to see these two girls being discriminated against. You know, they could have at least offered, you know what I'm saying? But that's the way it is, and kids can be mean. I don't care if they're in private school or public school.
Well, and also, like in high school, they had sub-dibs, tri-y, and co-eds. And tri-y was the highest, and sub-dibs and co-ed. And then tri-y was the most brilliant people. And I tried out for sub-dubs co-ed, but because of my clothes and, you know, and my personality too, I guess, that's probably I didn't get in. But you know, I did sign up for the classes to help out. We went to autistic children or spastic children's classes, you know, where you went and served something to drink and talk to the kids. So I did do a little bit, but the first time I went, I really cried so hard, you know, when I saw those children like that. But, you know, you have to be strong, and, you know, it is nice to be able to do something helpful for people.
It is. And whatever you give is going to come back to you. It doesn't matter, you know. I mean, if you're going to be greedy and you're going to be mean-spirited, one day it's all going to come slapping you right in the face, you know. You're going to knock you off your pedestal, you know, and then that's what happens, and that's how people learn, you know. They're like, oh, I guess I'm not a god. I guess I'm not all this powerful, you know. And so, you know, it's gratefulness, I think, and being thankful is so important, you know, for every day to be grateful and thankful.
Yes, and yeah, I have a gratitude book I write, three things or four, whatever, every night that I'm grateful for. It makes me feel good to do that. But I know someone was saying, you know, some of the very famous people would spend 4 hours talking about how grateful they were of all the people they knew and all the things. But that's a little too long, I think. you know, I could do it in like 15 minutes, you know, or 5 minutes. It depends. And I have to remember what I did that day. That's a big question. And then Barbara Streisand, I was watching her on internet, and she's been writing a journal. And now she's got a new book talking about all the men she slept with, probably. You know, it's amazing that the way she looked as a child and what she did for herself to build herself up, to, you know, reconstruct herself and become such a great famous person is because, you know, she had a tough life in the beginning. So I think
she slept
in her couch.
People, you know, who succeed, everybody thinks, oh, they're so lucky. They got, you know, they're so successful. They got this and they got that. But nobody knows the story behind how hard it is to become successful and how many times you have to fail and pick yourself up and try again, you know? And that's not easy to do because most people want to give up and say, forget it, you know? But if you just keep on, you know, trying to be grateful and thankful to God and pick yourself up, you'll find the positivity inside of you and the energy to do that. And
I don't even watch any of the violent movies anymore, you know. Although I did see Oppenheimer, which was very violent and very loud and noisy, but you know, because I think there are the only two movies that were playing that were popular, Barbie and Oppenheimer.
Well,
but do you go to movies anymore?
Oh yeah, I love movies. I don't like violent movies though. I just don't like violent, you know, because I think there's too much in the video games and cartoons, and I just think it's a negative for children. And people say, oh, it doesn't affect their brain. Yes, it affects their brain. Hello, what makes them think it doesn't affect their brain?
Yeah.
But anyway, I did want to.
Well, we saw a movie
the
other night. Yeah, called Julius, and it's about out of space person comes and crashes into the backyard. And so I would recommend it. It is really, really good.
Yeah, I like movies like that. Or, yeah, comedy or drama or something of human interest. I like those movies. They're just plain fun movies, silly movies.
Also the internet has all that stuff on the internet, you know. Besides your show and the internet, David Letterman and all those old shows are so great. All those fantastic comedians were really terrific. I've been watching a lot of that.
I watch the old classics sometimes, and I'll watch the those old comedy shows like, you know, Johnny Carson and all those, because those people were absolutely naturally hilarious. It was funny. Like Dean Martin and all those people. I have my kids watching them, and they're laughing, you know. Like I said, they're just naturally funny, you know. But I wanted to ask
then,
you, too.
Do you want to take a cruise? TCM, they have a cruise for... And they show movies on the cruise. It sounds like a nice idea, but I mean, I'm not doing it, but it sounds like a nice idea.
It does. We actually go to the graveyard in Hollywood, and where all the movies, a lot of the movie stars are buried, and they have a classic movie night during the summer, and they have, you know, like, sell, you know, like hot dogs and popcorn and stuff like that, and you just take your lawn chair and you just sit out there, and they have a huge screen, and you watch an old classic movie on the big screen, and so many people show up. It's amazing. It's really fun. We usually do that every year.
Oh wow!
It's really fun.
Really,
and the grave sites are amazing. I mean, they're just like, what
are
okay.
they? I know I've never.
Oh, you've never been there? Oh,
what street is that? It's in Hollywood Boulevard?
No, but I will send it to you. I'll send that information to you. Because before we, we're running out of time, I wanted to get back to you and your beautiful art and books and all this wonderful, the play you wrote. But I wanted to ask you, you said you had a neighbor, I believe, who was anti-Semitic. What happened? Because I had a neighbor that happened to. Not a neighbor, she was a friend. She was the nicest lady ever, and we got along really well. We had a lot of fun together, a lot of laughs. But she had a lot of problems.
You could separate her her way of being prejudiced. It would separate the friendship, and it didn't bother you. Didn't say anything to her.
I wasn't prejudiced. The people, there were young people who were harassing her because she was Jewish, and they were harassing her. And you know, like they put signs on her front yard or something like that. And it was awful. It was just awful. So I read that you had a problem.
Yeah, our neighbor, Maureen, she, when I lived on 85th Street, in L.A., and she put a sign saying, first she was nice to us because she wanted my mother to move our property and give her some property so that she could drive in the back and then rent out the room so that people could drive and through the alley or front of or the side of her house. So my mother gave her, you know, like 4 feet of property free. And then she, right after that, she put a big sign in front of her house saying, "No blacks or Jews allowed."
Oh, my goodness. That's horrible. That's horrible.
Yeah.
I just wanted people to know that we have to get along. We, you know, it's wrong. It's so wrong. And just, you know, we need to get back to basics and positive thinking and hopefully that positivity will go out into the universe if more people will do it. And maybe we can get more positivity back into our nation, which I think we need. And we need people like Esther and all of her beautiful works. So Esther, before we close, is there a message and a website you would like to tell our audience about? Because we've run out of time.
Okay, so it's EstherPearlman.com, EstherPearlmanBooks.com. My art is attached to the play, but because I can't send the I have to get, it was on demand, but now it's not. So I have to figure out, I'm going to try to get a grant, see if I can get it again, make a grant so that I can pay for it. So it does mention, if you go to White Fire Theater, you can, sometimes it'll say the name of the play, and or EstherPearlman.com, or on Google, see what happens. But I have to see, after 3 months, they took it off on demand. So now I don't know. I gotta get it back on somehow. But I appreciate it. Oh, you're just the loveliest lady, Rose. I really appreciate talking to you all the time, and we have such a good time.
We do, and I know, and, you know, we'll just have to, I'll try to get together again, you know. We all miss Erwin Zucker, that's for sure, and the book club.
Yeah.
And,
you didn't go to the book fair. Did you go to the book fair this year?
I didn't go to the one in L.A. I couldn't go to that one, but I was invited, and I wish I would have now canceled the other thing and gone to the book fair. But
Bruce Bernstein's in charge now. Did you get his emails? Oh, good.
I haven't seen any emails lately. I was getting them, but I don't get them recently. I don't know if they're...
somebody was offering to have their swim party in the backyard. was going to have a meeting in the pool. The meeting's in the pool. It's too bad. Erwin was absolutely wonderful. And that's so great that you're so consistent and having your radio show and so popular. That's wonderful. And congratulations on your book also.
Oh, thank you, Esther Pearlman, and God bless you, and keep up the good work, and keep inspiring people, and keep on going, and I want to hear about your next episode.
I know. I'll go wait till the delivery man comes, see what he delivers. Thanks a lot, Rose. Good talking to you. Take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And that's all we have time for, folks, and remember, injustices can happen to you and they can happen to me, but together we can make a positive difference. Remember that you are never alone. When you tune in to Columbo Chronicles Live, you will always learn something from our very popular experts and authors. So never give up on your dream.
Well, my friends, time flies. And now is the time to say goodbye. Thanks so much for being part of the Columbo Chronicles family. You are appreciated. Please do it now. Bookmark. Push that like, share, and follow button. Oh, and don't forget to comment below and stay in touch. Make your family part of the Columbo family. Until next Wednesday at noon, remember, God loves you, and so does the Rose.